The following Art Trap production is brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by donations from listeners like you.
Look, Brigadier, look! I think it's starting.
Well, here we go again.
Live from a two-car garage at the Scientific Reform Society headquarters, this is Doctor Who Podshock. Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it.
No, I...
Then whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Lewis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
Over 40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you?
The Gallifreyan Embassy presents Doctor Who Podshock, episode 164. My name is Ken Deep, alongside Mr. Lewis Trapani.
Hey, hello.
Across the pond is none other than the man, the legend, Mr. James Naughton.
Hello.
And heading in the other direction, our West Coast correspondent, Mr. Joshua Lou Friedman.
Hey, konnichiwa, folks.
All right, so it's a swinging, sexy episode of Doctor Who Podshock. We're back with news and a review of Robot, the debut story for Tom Baker, and some other things that'll probably pop up over the course of the next, I don't know, how long does Podshock go for, like 4 hours?
Two minutes now.
Two minutes already. Yeah, don't worry.
We're already over
only
that.
Only 241 to go.
And we're already doubled that time now. So thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Great to be back on the show, guys.
You know what's funny? There's a podcast out there that is actually shorter than our intro. The two-minute Time Lord gets a podcast done before we even get welcome to the show.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, that's deliberately so that people can listen to that while they listen to our opening and, you know, fit in two podcasts in one sitting.
Yeah.
You know, multitasking.
You just skip right by it. All right. Well, in the Doctor Who newsroom, I'm going to lead off as a very exciting bit of news in the New York area. Our friends from our friend Barnaby from DWNY has a brand new event going on called Who York. It's an evening with Louise Jameson, who played Leela in the Tom Baker era of the show, and that's coming up very soon. And that's why I wanted to get the news out very quickly.
We should just say that Who York is coming up next year as an event, but this is a preview event.
Kind of like what Hurricane Who did.
Yeah.
Prior to Hurricane Who having its full-on convention, they had a few of these evenings, like these one-day events with different Doctor Who and Torchwood guests for over a year leading up to their major convention. And it was a great idea because it built a little bit of momentum and excitement getting up to the convention. Well, this is the first event for Who York, and whoyork.com is their website, www.whoyork.com. In the enhanced podcast, of course, there will be a link to it. And so on Tuesday, November 3rd, 2009, in New York City, they're going to have an evening with Louise Jameson. Fantastic. Finally, a classic Doctor Who guest in the heart of Manhattan.
Yeah, I haven't seen Louise Jameson since a good 25 years ago, I would say.
May of 86?
I don't remember exactly when. I know it was the mid-80s.
It was early 80s for me. I was a little boy when I first met Louise Jameson. She did a book signing out here in Long Beach. So, yeah, that was a long time. And hats off for the DWN NY guys for putting that together. I finally got, you know, when I was out visiting you guys during the summer, I got to go to the meetup in the city, and that was amazing. And everyone there was just amazing, so... hello and hats off to Barnaby and everybody out there. It's just amazing. A lot of fun.
Yeah, this is a separate thing from it's not
from their meetup. Sure, yeah. but,
to DWNY, but it's some of the people who have been involved in DWNY, and that's fantastic. You know, they want to get it to stand on its own legs and stuff. And
sure.
So this is very exciting just to have somebody coming to town, you know, in our own backyard, and it's great. I'm kind of thrilled about it, actually.
Yeah, well, outside of New York Comic Con last February, you know, with Colin Baker being there, this is the first time we're having a classic Doctor Who guest in the New York area in some years.
Yeah. Prior to that, maybe Sylvester at Icon some...
Yeah, and that was 10 years like 1999, ago, like 10 years ago.
So this is definitely exciting news, and we're glad to be there. I know Lewis and I will both be going along with Billy, the white robot, and who's actually texted me within minutes of the tickets going on sale. He says, "Bought my tickets already. I wanted to show support." So, you know, it's great if you're a Doctor Who fan and you live in the New York area, if you're in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. This is a good way of showing support. If the event is strong, other promoters and you know, the people from Chicago TARDIS are bringing New York TARDIS in May of 2010 around. Let's show everybody that there's still a strong support for Doctor Who in New York. I mean, we were between New Jersey Network and WLIW, and there were a lot of clubs in the area. There was a lot of the classic show aired in the area a lot. I don't know, I'm just pretty amped up about the whole thing. Now,
they may have a cutoff if the venue is only so big. I don't know this for sure. I'm guessing that maybe they can only sell so many tickets.
You know what? That should be the big problem. I mean, and I'm being facetious, of course, but I mean, how great would it be if the event sold out? I mean, all that does is guarantee that the next
guarantee
one,
another year. Yeah,
yeah.
That there's a demand for it, and then someone actually wants to go. So. To me, it's a no-brainer. Tuesday, November 3rd, 2009. It's at Cafe.
It's Election Day, I believe.
Cafe 50 West, and it's 22nd Street between 5th and 6th Avenue in Manhattan in New York City. 7:30 p.m., the doors open at 7. It's $20 per person. There's also food and drinks there. It's a 21 and over crowd, so you have to be over 21, I think, to attend. Or is it 18 or 21? It says on their website. And tickets are available at whoyork.com. So great opportunity calling all New York Doctor Who fans.
So after you vote for your potential elected politician that probably won't get anything done anyway, you can vote for Louise Jameson.
Yeah, I'm going to cast my vote for Leela.
Yes.
Fine.
Vote for the Savage.
Yes. I believe she entered Gallifrey in politics, didn't she?
Yeah, she was the 17-6 constituency, I guess. The 17.
Yeah.
Her run.
So it's an evening with Louise Jameson. It's whoyork.com, and it's on Tuesday, November 3rd. And that's separate from their normal pub meets and their meetups and stuff. So pretty exciting stuff. That's our lead story. We wanted to get the word out about that. And again, this is a separate thing from New York TARDIS, which is May of 2010. And again, this is exciting that we're going to have two conventions get off the ground in the New York area. We went from 0 to 1 to 2 very quickly. And so to me, it's the reason to show that kind of support and enthusiasm is you don't want somebody to say, "Oh, yeah, we tried it in New York and it didn't really go so hot. Yeah, they had 12 people there." No, no way.
New Yorkers aren't going to let that happen, though.
Yeah. Next time they'll have to try a bigger city. Well, in other news, we had the trailer for Series 3 of Sarah Jane Adventures was released. Unfortunately, it's locked down to the UK only on the BBC site, unless you use a proxy to see it, whatever. So there's the trailer there. There's some stills that had been posted on sarahjane.tv, which is a blog about the Sarah Jane Adventures television series. And we have some of those on our site with links back to their site. Also, Digital Spy also posted some first photos of the Doctor, David Tennant as the Doctor, on the his appearance on the series.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, James, you want to weigh in on this? Have you seen it?
I have seen it, yes. It was quite a weird trailer, really, because It wasn't specifically for the Sarah Jane Adventures. It was for CBBC, and it was trying to promote all of the British content and fantastic programs that they're making and doing. And it was part of their sort of drama envelope, a part of that. It was sort of like a 10, 15 minute long. Well, it was certainly quite a long series of trailers for all the different shows that they have running. And Sarah Jane was the first one under this drama sort of umbrella, talking about, you know, how it's coming back for another series and just showing little snippets of what's to come. But it didn't include anything from the Doctor, which I thought was a bit of a disappointment, really. It was just sort of the general bog-standard trailer that you'd expect. All of the characters there, Sarah Jane there. There was a little bit of stuff showing, you know, what could be in the first few episodes with the kind of aliens involved and so on. But that was about it. So it was quite short and sweet, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see as the months progress, the weeks progress, I guess.
Yes, because it's on very, very soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, October 15th is the start of the Series 3 of Sarah Jane Adventures, and it continues on.
Weeks. Okay, awesome. Yeah.
I think they're showing part one on Thursday,
and then Friday is part two.
Part two, yeah, on Friday. So that's quite a cool way to do it, I think, because they're showing two a week.
Yes.
Which is awesome, I think, which will really keep people sort of plugged in and really interested in the series, I think.
It worked for Torchwood in 1 week, so why not?
Yeah, one Sarah Jane.
Yeah, and the thing with Sarah Jane is that since their stories take two episodes to tell, everything's a two-parter. You know, every story is a two-parter, so you get one full story per week.
Hmm.
And not long to wait for in between, so the day after.
Yes. It's a good way to do it, really, because it means that you get the sort of traditional cliffhanger which you sort of expect from Doctor Who, and you get that every week, so you have to wait for the next day to see what's going to happen, which killed me with Children of Earth, but because, like, oh, how the hell is this whole thing going to pan out, yeah, and so on. But it really made for great viewing, so I hope that's how they're going to do it. They're going to have it on Thursday and then on Friday, so, and on BBC One as well, which is fantastic.
Now, speaking of trailers, have you gentlemen seen the new trailer? It just came out, I think, yesterday, for the K-9 series.
No, I have. I've seen stills.
It's kind of, I don't know. It's kind of scary. It's
be honest, scary how.
Yeah, what are you really trying to say, Lewis?
Yeah.
I'm going to send you the link to it right now.
Oh. I'm afraid.
So we can watch it live on the show.
And react.
And all be in horror.
They originally had said that this series is going to start with K-9. You're going to see K-9 as we know K-9 today, and then he's going to metamorphosize into
he's going to regenerate
of K-9.
Mm.
And I've seen the designs for that. And they, 12 or 13 episodes, and Leeson's recorded
26,
them all?
26 half-hour episodes.
I'm sorry, I thought you said 26 episodes. Really?
Yeah, 26 episodes, wow. Half-hour episodes, and it's being produced in Australia, but it's going to be set in the UK. So
which
everyone's going to
really
be
really frustrating.
Everyone's going to be faking a UK accent.
Yes, because from the trailers before, they were quite bad, the accents.
Special delivery from the department.
They have John Leeson back as the voice, but it's the character is not the same. He suffers a memory loss, and that explains why he doesn't remember his past adventures with the Doctor, so that's how they get around that.
I see.
The old memory wipe gag.
Yeah.
What are you?
My name is K-9.
I don't know where you came from.
My mem drive seems to have been scrambled. I have no memory of myself.
Your general reference capacity is unharmed and absolutely stupendous.
That tickles.
We think it's a weapon of some kind, but not one of ours.
Not yet.
Ugly. Ungainly. Terrible design.
My supercomputer brain and language circuits purely for show, are they?
track down, captured, and handed over.
Let's grab her and get our butts back through that portal.
Agreed. Rapid transport of butts, imperative.
Why is the department imprisoning aliens?
There's a lot we don't know about the department.
The ability to travel through space and time is enormously valuable.
Aliens. Why is it never anything Fluffy or friends with?
Imminent detonation! I recommend rapid movement in the opposite direction of the Xenomorph.
In other words, run.
Affirmative.
Oops.
The girl knows.
No!
I'm going after her.
Schrodinger's cat and kittens.
Temporal error detected. Exit strategy?
Oi!
What do you want?
Don't really know if I like the flying canine.
No, I don't.
Are you watching it now?
I was, and I had to stop it.
I'm afraid to, because I'm afraid I'm going to get jumped.
You don't want to get disconnected.
Anyway,
wait, question. They're doing 26 of these?
26, yeah. It's at the end of the trailer. I think they posted.
I have to say, why on earth do they have in the background, in the trailer, Star Trek music? This is the soundtrack from the latest Star Trek film.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
I didn't catch on to that.
Yeah, that's really weird.
Yeah, series one, 26 half-hour episodes. It's at the 2:46 minute mark in the trailer.
So they came up with 26 episodes worth of stories for this show?
I don't know how many. I don't know how many half-hour. I don't know if their stories are separated in, you know, parts. If there's, let's just say, if it's like Sarah Jane Adventures, is it two half-hour ones that tell a whole story, or, you know, is each one contained one full story? So I don't know.
I don't know.
I have to say, watching the trailer, the characters seem rather nondescript, but the production values are a lot better than I expected.
I'm
kind of scanning it, and they do look good. But we'll just have to see. I mean,
yes.
It just doesn't seem like the same K-9 character. I mean, I'm a big K-9 fan, and this just doesn't seem K-9. It seems it's another robot dog with K-9's voice, but it doesn't seem like K-9.
No, I agree. But the thing is that I would like to see an episode.
Oh yeah, before we're just judging from the trailer, so
The biggest fail for me for this is that it's such an insult to Australia to set it in to film it in Australia, get Australian actors to do it, and yet it's set in the UK. Why? Mm-hmm. Why couldn't they either have done it in the UK, or why couldn't they have just set it in Australia?
I agree 100%. And you know what? I was thinking, how come there isn't any original Australian science fiction television that I know of?
Well, Farscape, or is that New Zealand? Is that from New Zealand?
I think that's New Zealand.
It is.
We
want
confused.
More Aussie sci-fi.
Yes.
More, any.
Approximation of British sci-fi, you know, setting it in Britain, filming it in Australia.
Hello?
Why?
Yes, you're still with us, Josh.
Oh, cool. It hiccuped. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, you know what? Australia had the greatest setting about a week ago. They had this red dust storm coming over half the continent there, and it looked something out of, you know, a science
fiction.
Looked
like Mars itself,
The whole red sky and really eerie. You got to check out the photographs. They're all available, you know, on the net. You can find them, you know, just Google red dust storm Australia, you'll find them.
Yeah. It was really funny because when they were interviewing people about their experiences in Sydney particularly was really badly hit. People thought that it was bushfires that was the cause of this red glow, but it wasn't. It was just, you know, just this red dust. And the pictures of, particularly of Sydney Harbour Bridge,
is
pretty eerie looking at that. And
the Opera House, and it just
yeah,
really.
There's actually pictures of this red dust behind the Opera House. That's
pretty. Oh yeah, you have to see it, Josh. It's incredible. It really looks like something on another planet. You've never seen photographs like this before.
All right, my queue is filling up. I've got to check out K9, the red dust, and this coffee link.
When you have homework.
I have my marching orders. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Well, we'll just have to reserve judgment. But I'm quite astonished. I don't know about you guys, but for series one alone, that they're producing 26 half hour episodes. That's astonishing to me.
Well, they had enough lead time. This has been in the works for several years now.
I think almost as long as Podchuck has been going, actually, which is almost 4 years.
Yeah, well, pretty much. I think it was the first Icon that we did our show in. So it was, I think, more like March of 2006 when it was officially. I don't think it was officially announced yet. It was on one of the tabloid papers, and we were announcing it on our show, saying take it with a grain of salt. You know, we didn't really think it was true that there was going to be a K9 spinoff.
And I just watched that trailer without sound. I was just scanning it so I can kind of keep up there. Is it meant to be? It's like Sarah Jane Adventures, where it's aimed directly at children.
Yeah, I think it's aimed at children. Yes.
Okay.
I'll catch that when I catch the trailer, I'm sure, but curious. All right.
But to say a production company who I'd never heard of, well, it may well be the case. Why would I have heard of them? Because, of course, you know, it's an Australian production company. But the values are very high. The special effects look very good. The acting doesn't seem too bad. It's just, we'll have to reserve judgment as soon as it's broadcast.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree with you. I think, you know, I think the production values are there. It's just, I'm not sure, you know, some of the concepts, I don't know, are questionable.
Yes, certainly.
So, but we'll wait and we'll watch the first episode. We'll continue watching and see what we think.
All right. I have another news item in the TARDIS newsroom. How about Digital Spy reporting? They spoke to Paul McGann, and he said that a Doctor Who return is unlikely. That was what he said about this rumor about him being in filming a Children in Need sequence as the Eighth Doctor, and he said that that it was very unlikely, which stinks.
Yeah. But I think that's every. I haven't heard a single fan who's been like, "Oh, I wouldn't want to see Paul McGann return to the role." Everybody's been like really super excited with.
Well, there just wasn't enough of them.
Yes.
So any chance, you know, if it was a matter of, oh, well, I'll get a chance to see a little bit more of the Eighth Doctor, even if you weren't a fan of the movie, there is a desire just to see more of that Doctor because he just didn't have enough screen time.
Yeah. And he can't thrive on Big Finish alone, you know?
Oh, speaking of Big Finish, what about that Frasier Hines and Colin Baker teaming up with Jamie and the Sixth Doctor? I think that's pretty cool. It's an interesting... interesting idea that they're going to
sort of a two doctors reunion.
Yeah, I was going to say they'd set that precedent there, so I wonder if it ties in somehow.
They've done that with Charlie Pollard, the Eighth Doctor's companion, pairing her up with the Sixth Doctor, but at least that's one of their companions. So they can kind of get away with some stuff. This is going to be interesting because they're taking some established continuity and they're having some fun with it. But there's definitely some chemistry between them. I mean, that's, you know, Colin Baker and Frasier Hines are going to have a great time together. And
oh, of course. And didn't they? I feel like they've done this before. Or they're doing it in December, isn't Susan?
Yes,
Susan.
The Earthly Child with Susan and Paul McGann. So Caroline Ford and Paul McGann.
Yeah, they're taking chances.
Like it a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I concur.
Well, in other news, there was a confirmation as far as Dreamland, the animated Doctor Who story that's coming out very soon. In fact, I believe Gary Russell had commented that it takes place somewhere after Waters of Mars, the Doctor's
special,
appearance on Sarah Jane, or somewhere in between there. So
that soon, right?
But CBC had a promotional item that had stated that it was only going to be on CBC on the CBBC, which contradicts what we had previously heard, but there was a press release, and it confirms that it will be broadcast on CBBC and BBC HD, which is the high-definition channel, this autumn. But it's going to be appearing first on the red button BBC thing, which is the interactive thing. And
I love the name Red Button. It's just
and on the BBC website and on the Doctor Who website. So I'm sure that I'm guessing, and I'm be very surprised if it's not going to be locked down to the UK. So I'm sure on the website it probably will be locked down to the UK only.
Yeah. And, if it is on the web, it's, you know, it's a certainty that it will be locked down because of this whole iPlayer thing and the license fee and so on and so forth. Which, interestingly, in the news, this isn't really Doctor Who related, but one of the bigwigs at the, I think it was one of the, I don't know if it was the B boss or one of the head bosses of television suggested that people be made to pay for iPlayer, as in pay per episode or pay a subscription fee to view iPlayer.
That's like double dipping.
Yes, but the Beeb came back straight away and said, no, we're not going to do that. Whilst it would, you know, give them tremendous income, because I think people would pay to watch this stuff, particularly if they've missed it or whatever. But I think that, you know, that they've said on many occasions, this is part of the license fee. The license fee covers this. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I would pay the license fee just to watch stuff on iPlayer, because I watch iPlayer and use iPlayer so much. So I think it's a real bonus that the BBC are doing it. And I'm so thankful that they're not going to do the easy thing and just say, okay, well, we'll start having it on a subscription basis or a pay per episode kind of a thing. So that's in a way that's kind of sad for people outside of the UK, because that's kind of what we've had conversations about this before, that people would happily pay a premium to see things a bit earlier and over the net
to lift the lockdown.
To sort of, as you say, you know, open it up, but at the same time, it's I guess it's designed for UK viewers and it's part of the license fee. So,
well, they can set it up so that they know where the connections are coming from. For instance, the BBC site itself is ad-free for UK people, but they know if the incoming connection's outside of the UK, just like they can lock down the video, they'll place ads and they monetize their site for non-UK visitors. So why not do the same thing but video content?
Yes, why not have the happy medium and say, okay, we will make it free for UK viewers, mm-hmm. but if you're outside of the UK, then display adverts or display
do a pre-roll or one of the lower third, you know, things because, that Yahoo does. You know,
there are equivalent sites like Channel 4 has their own equivalent of iPlayer, as does ITV and Channel 5, etc. So, and they all have adverts. So I guess you could probably watch their content outside of the UK. I don't know. And it should work.
The whole thing is getting so frustrating. I'm just going to throw my hands up in the air. I'm just going to call you, James. And I'll just be like, okay, you're watching it?
What's happening?
Give him the play by play.
I'll give a running commentary.
Please don't. I think that's what we've come down to. Thanks, BBC. Thank you.
Just getting back to Dreamland for a second, it's a 7-part series. It's written by Phil Ford, and as we previously reported, David Tennant stars in it with Georgia Moffat and David Warner. So look forward to that. And like I said, that will be coming very soon after Waters of Mars, which is November-ish. We're guessing it might even be Halloween right before November, so...
I guess I haven't done all my homework. Georgia Moffat's in it. She's not playing.
She's playing Cassie Rice instead of, Jenny, the Doctor's daughter. She's playing Cassie Rice, which is a companion to the 10th Doctor in this story.
Excellent. All right.
And then the Christmas/New Year. John Sim was on one of the shows over the at the Beeb this past week.
Newsbeat. He was saying on Newsbeat, is this him saying that it's going to be a great end of series, mm-hmm. you know, nice send off for David Tennant?
Yes, and he mentioned that it's Christmas, and he was kind of vague, saying something around roughly around New Year's. Although the episode title, Between Waters of Mars and End of Time, is, we remember, it's a two-parter. It's a 60-minute and a 75-minute part one and part two for Christmas and Other. The other part is called Nightmares Reign, in addition to The End of Time. And that that came out because the revised version of the writer's tale
leaked. That's,
I guess, leaked out or whatever. And,
is that part one or part two?
Nightmares Reign is part one, and The End of Time is the longer 75-minute regeneration part.
Yes.
Mm.
And Nightmares Reign really doesn't leak anything out. It's the equivalent to The Phantom Menace being the name of a Star Wars movie. What do you learn about that? Oh, wow, Nightmares Reign. Yeah, that means that blank is in it. It doesn't really tell you anything. So,
well, at least it's not like, you know, Destiny of the Daleks or whatever, or, you know, Revenge of
the
Cyber.
The time the Cybermen came out of the sewer, part one.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I kind of liked it when they did stuff like that, when it was the invasion and you didn't know it was the Cybermen and all this kind of stuff. But
like things like Horns of the Nymon kind of let you know.
Gives it away.
Gives it away.
Or at the time, Earthshock.
Yeah.
At the time. That's true. Yeah.
But David Tennant is going to be on the Christian O'Connell Breakfast Show. It's a radio show on Absolute Radio in the UK that runs from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. And this is going to be starting in autumn leading up to his final Doctor Who specials. And he plans on being there for the whole entire show instead of just doing like a little segment, an hour or so. So he's,
oh, wow, really?
You're going to get your fill of Tennant. In fact, he wants to even come in prior to the host to be part of the pre-show brainstorming meetings of this radio series. I'm not really familiar with it. But.
Wasn't he going to host one exclusively? I seem to remember. I'm just talking out loud, thinking out loud here. I seem to remember a while ago there was a story saying that he was going to host for a short while, be the sole host on a radio show for a while one of their hosts was off on holiday or something like that. And I wonder if this is the same deal.
Yeah.
Same deal.
They don't really mention that. This information comes from the Absolute Radio website. So that, you know, they,
right.
They don't go into really details. There's no actual dates posted on when it's going to start, but it just says a run of breakfast shows leading up, you know, to his, final, you know, departure in Doctor Who.
Interesting.
So I don't know if it's going to be every day or if it's just going to be, you know, one day a week. I don't know how it's going to pan out.
Okay. Interesting to know.
Mm-hmm.
So is there any more news in the old newsroom? No.
I'm sure there's probably other stuff that we're missing out, but I think those are the major ones that I can think of.
So all the blips on the current radar. Awesome.
All right, so we'll be right back and with our review of Robot.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is John Levine, Sergeant Benton, thrilled to be on the Doctor Who Podshock, and I will return. I shall come back.
What's that? It's a sonic screwdriver. Never fails.
Drop the sonic device.
Isn't my day, is it?
Even the sonic screwdriver won't get me out of this one.
Are you seeking Doctor Who news? The Sonic News Driver. Selected Doctor Who-related news stories delivered sonically. All in a bite-sized podcast. No bigger than a jelly baby.
Function of a sonic blaster, a sonic cannon, and a triple and folded sonic disruptor. Doc, what you got?
I've got a sonic. Never mind.
What?
It's sonic. Okay, let's leave it at that.
Disruptor, cannon, what?
It's sonic. Totally sonic. I am sonic to all.
A sonic what? Screwdriver!
The Sonic News Driver. Find it on iTunes or go to sonicnewsdriver.com.
Who has
has a sonic screwdriver?
I do.
The Sonic News Driver. Get yours today, sonically.
Neat, isn't it? Hmm?
Last time on Doctor Who Podshock, I said to keep watching our website for a special announcement. Well, we weren't kidding. There's something in the works. It's just is taking a little bit longer to put together than we expected. So it should be coming soon. So please do continue to check our website, gallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net. We had hoped it would be ready for now. And in fact, it was kind of delaying this podcast. So to prevent any further delays, we'll just delay the announcement. So stay tuned for that special announcement. It will be on our website as well as a future episode of Doctor Who Podshock.
Look, Brigadier, look. I think it's starting.
Well, here we go again. Get with the medical officer. Lieutenant Sullivan, emergency. Come to the lab at once, please. Human history. What's he talking about?
It's something that happened when we first met.
I tell you, Brigadier, there's nothing to worry about. The Brontosaurus is large and placid.
This the patient, sir?
And stupid. The square on the hypotenuse equals the sum of the square on the other two sides. Why is a mouse when it spins? Never did know the answer to that one.
Excuse me, sir. The daily reports.
Take him to the sick bay. I'll make a proper examination there.
What's happening, sir? Who's...
That, Mr. Benton, is the doctor.
You mean he's done it again? He's changed.
Apparently. Saw it happen this time. Lieutenant Sullivan.
Yes, sir.
I'm placing the doctor in your personal charge. He's to have your full attention.
Righto, sir.
Right. Anything urgent, Mr. Benton?
No, sir. Just routine.
Yes, everything seems pretty quiet.
And we're back with Doctor Who Podshock. So, as part of our regeneration series of podcasts, where we're going to review every pre- and post-regeneration episode, before we get to Matt Smith's era, we're all the way up to Robot, which is Tom Baker's first episode as the newly regenerated Fourth Doctor, after, of course, Planet of the Spiders. So, funnily enough, this episode features a robot. A rather large one.
That. You never expect it, but the title, like, Robot.
Yes. And, back to what we were talking about earlier, yeah.
So...
it's a very historical episode, not in the sense that it takes place back in time, but as you just mentioned, this is Tom Baker's first story. It also introduces a whole new era of Doctor Who with Barry Letts leaving and Philip Hitchcliffe coming in, and it's a whole...
Robert Holmes yes. taking over for Script Editor.
So it's a big transition story that they introduce Harry Sullivan, Ian Marner, playing Harry Sullivan, though it's a new introduction to the character. He's been in Doctor Who before, so
yes. But I thought it was really clever with that they had kind of preempted that with Planet of the Spiders when I think it's when the Doctor is ill, or is it when it's when the Doctor stares into the blue crystal, isn't it? And the Brigadier gets on the telephone and says, you know, get me Sullivan, you know, the Doctor.
Yeah.
Which was quite a clever move, I thought.
Well, not only that, they actually shot this episode simultaneous with Planet of the Spiders.
Yes,
this was shot
very
during their 11th
good,
season.
Yeah.
So they were only sharing, and the reason for that was, well, they didn't have to center the schedule around the one Doctor because, you know, it was a new one. So it wasn't like your schedule around John Pertwee's schedule. We have our own new Doctor, and the only characters were shared were Nicholas Courtney and Elizabeth Sladen, which was terrible for them to have to run back and forth in between stories, I'm sure. It must have, you know. But, yeah, they shot it at the same time.
It's
great.
interesting to know, because, I mean, that's very common today with Doctor Who. They have the Doctor Light stories, which is a result of them shooting two episodes, you know, simultaneously.
Back to back, yeah.
Yeah. And you mentioned that, you know, Harry had been on Carnival of Monsters before. They originally wanted Harry to play Captain Yates.
You mean, you mean Ian. Ian Martyr.
Ian Martyr to play Captain Yates. Hello. And, for scheduling, he had to turn it down, and then they got him to Carnival of Monsters, and then, finally nailed him for Harry.
That's because originally they didn't know who was going to play the Doctor, and it could have been an older actor.
Guys, they wanted someone to be to do the physical aspect of the thing.
Playing the Ian role the Willem Hartnell Doctor, Doctor.
Yeah. And then they got in Tom Baker, who had gotten Tom Baker, who was younger and obviously could run around more, and, Harry was kind of, his character was left redundant, which is, I think, one of the reasons why he was written out, after the first season.
I'm still glad they didn't just do away with him once they, you know, cast Tom Baker. I'm glad they actually took him, you know, on the TARDIS, and this was the launch of his, as a companion, because this could have just been a one-off thing for Robot, and that was it, you know.
It's funny you should mention, though, that he stepped in the TARDIS and went on with them, although they never actually utilized the interior of the TARDIS set until Planet of Evil. So you actually never saw Harry during his entire run inside the TARDIS.
That's a good point.
He always was in and out of the exterior of it, which is unfortunate, because it seemed like they waited for him to leave the show, and then the very next shot of the next episode, hey...
Yeah, Sarah, I always sort of miss that when you don't see the interior. I mean, I understand the justification and the cost and the logistics
story and all the rest of it. Yeah,
but it's always a missing element when.
But it kind of seems like that at the moment with David Tennant. Really, is that we never, other than the console room, we never see any other part of the TARDIS. We've seen a shot of the wardrobe, if you like. In of course the Christmas invasion, but that's been it. And I feel kind of the same way, Lewis, is that I understand the reasons for it, but you want to see quite a bit of the TARDIS because that's one of the most interesting parts of the show. And really, the TARDIS is, for me at least, like a character of the show
with infinite possibilities. I mean, certainly an Invasion of Time. And Logopolis, to some degree, we were able to see a lot more. So I'm surprised they haven't explored that more in the new series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. When Jonathan Turner came on board, it seemed like he took the time to actually show the internal geography of the TARDIS in a sense, and you got the feel of how big it is really. Because as you just said, with the David Tennant era, outside of the console room, you don't really get the size of how big the TARDIS really is on the inside. We've seen the wardrobe room, which is. Kind of fitting that you mentioned that, James, because in this episode is the first time in a regeneration where the newly regenerated Doctor goes into the TARDIS, and though we don't see the wardrobe room, he obviously goes into the wardrobe
somewhere.
Room and tries out a few different outfits, much to the chagrin of the Brigadier.
Yeah. What is he? He was an ace of or king of spades, and a pirate clown, and
because prior to that, the third Doctor just picked up whatever was on hand at the hospital, which happened to be a sort of that dandy fancy dress cape,
outfit,
and he kept with that style, and although the second Doctor,
did you notice? Well, now that you brought that up, did you notice the callback to that regeneration story? And Spearhead from Space, when he was searching for his TARDIS key, he produced it from his boots, which they called back to in Robot.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, the third Doctor always kept his in his shoes, didn't he?
Yeah. So it was nice that they kind of continued that with Baker's first when he was searching for the key to get out of there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
This episode also has an amazing line, a little bit of dialogue between the Brigadier and the fourth Doctor, very Tom Baker in its stylings, where he says, of course Britain was entrusted with the security or whatever the codes are, and he says, of course, everybody else are foreigners.
They're foreigners.
Absolutely hysterical line. And very...
I'm right with you on that one.
Very Tom Baker in its flavoring, that's for sure.
And they slip it in there, too. It's very subtle. They just slip it in there, you know?
So even though this story is very much jointly made by the same production of the John Pertwee era and all that, I felt that this really had a different feel to it, a different texture to the whole John Pertwee style of storytelling and visually represented on screen. Well, first of all the outdoor shooting was done on video as opposed to film, and that was because of the robot sequences. It would work better. It would, because of color separation overlay or chroma key, it would work better. It would be more consistent if you had the robot, because there were scenes at the end where he has to grow, and but because of that, everything's shot on video. There's no outdoor film work, which is traditionally at the time that was done.
Always on film. I think what it was they knew for the CSO they needed to do, and they were talking about we could shoot it on the exteriors on video. What it was these cameras were coming into play, the OB cameras, the outside broadcast cameras, were coming into play for sporting events and news. And so they just kind of borrowed those and gave it a shot, and it seemed to work out okay.
And along the same lines, it was this story, it's a very dark story, not saying the story is dark, but as I just said, but it's visually, it was shot lighting wise. It was lit. If you look at it, there are a lot of dark sequences, and it's mostly lit by just a key light, and very few fill lights. And it was a lot of shadow work, which is, again, very different than what we've seen previously with the John Pertwee era. So I think visually this episode, this story looks very different than the previous stories that we've seen with John Pertwee.
And special effects wise, it's pretty ambitious as well when you think about it. A giant robot, which I think it sticks in a lot of people's minds, because it does look, you know, in 2009 a little bit dodgy, because it's damn obvious that it's, you know, blue screen or green screen. But it's great that they just did it. They had this fantastic design for the robot, which is sticks in everybody's mind. It's kind of like the classic sci-fi robot from the 50s and 60s, gleaming metal.
It's a great design. I mean, it may
holds up.
It may seem outdated today, but for its time, I think it's classic.
Yes, really retro and very, very cool. And it's quite a novel concept, really, for I think for a robotic story, really.
It's sort of like Doctor Who meets iRobot, a little bit of Frankenstein, and obviously in part four, King Kong.
Because it's the first time, I think, that a robot was portrayed as a monster, really.
But then you were meant to pity him more toward the end. He had that severe Oedipal complex where he had killed his father and then kind of latched on to Sarah Jane as his mother. I think even Tom Baker mentions the Oedipal effect in the episode. So you definitely got that, which is great, because there's like scenes where, like in King Kong, you'd pity him, even though he'd reach into an apartment and grab the wrong woman and throw her away. Now, that's hideous, and that's a monster. But at the same time, you were pitying his action because he was looking for his love. And I felt that pity, I think, in the King Kong-esque sequences in Robot, where he was latching onto Sarah.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. And lots of screaming from good old Sarah Jane. I'm surprised that Elizabeth Sladen didn't wear out her vocal cords or lose her voices. Because this episode really sticks in my brain. I remember watching this as a kid and thinking, you know, my God, you know, that poor actress having to do all that screaming. Because it was pretty bad Doctor Who generally for screaming assistants, at least in this kind of era. But this episode really stuck in my brain in terms of just how much screaming was going on. And I think it is kind of a... You know, people always talk about sort of the Hinchcliffe era of Doctor Who being, you know, the horror type. Hammer horror Doctor Who. And this is kind of like to my mind anyway, the first sort of proper Hammer horror-esque episode, really. I think.
Agreed, yeah. And the robot, not just outside with the CSO doing the giant robots, ambitious, but and how Lewis mentioned how the lighting was, how they shot the robot. Occasionally, they would really nail it with shooting the robot from low angles.
I was just, yeah. I agree, yes.
To really generate size when he was standing next to someone. And if you look out for those, they're very effective. And I think subconsciously we were always aware of them. But if you look out for them, they really consciously kind of try to do that, and it really delivers that sense of scale.
Another thing they did with, and just the way they shot certain angles, the way that, the director of photography really took grasp of the story was, everything was in confined. It seemed like in confined spaces. You got a sense of being claustrophobic. Mm. Even the outdoor stuff. All the characters were lining up on buildings. You never really saw any real open spaces. It really gave you a sense of like I said, being claustrophobic in a sense. And I thought it was interesting the way they did that.
Yeah.
And Michael.
The same way. Go ahead.
No, I say Michael Kilgraff as well played the robot, and he was the cyber leader back in Tomb of the Cybermen. He's known for being this like really big, tall, imposing guy. Although a few parts, obviously, there's miniatures for the robot, but in the parts where it was a suit, it was our cyber leader from Tomb and Attack of the Cybermen.
Yeah, it's actually his name. Michael Kilgraff is his name, and another benefit about having him in the role, he's 6'5", as it is, and he was like kind of in the costume. The head was more like a hat that he wore. But the benefit of having him in the role and performing all of his dialogue within the costume was, if you watch, he's speaking, the costume itself is moving with him. Mm-hmm. So rather than you get a feel of they shot a robot and had another actor dub the voiceover later, and sometimes it doesn't have that organic sense to it, mm-hmm. which is a bad adjective when we're talking about robots. But you know, when he speaks, he's moving, and it all that reads throughout the episode.
The gestures, so, yeah.
The gestures. I mean, it reads so you feel like there's a character there. So you know that again. That really is, you know, sold the robot. Yeah, Kilgariff was amazing in it.
Yeah, he did a
great job with it. Where you could, I mean, obviously it was a clumsy outfit and it was hard to walk in, but I think that added to the story. You know, that this big, giant, massive robot. You know,
was cumbersome.
Yeah. So I think that that was actually added to it that he, you know, he stumbled a bit.
Oh, especially when the unit soldiers are they're firing on him, mm-hmm. and he almost eats it. It's very obvious, and they left it in, which is great. You know, another funny thing about that shot, though. When out of the Scientific Reform Society and the unit soldiers are all firing on him and he stumbles. If you watch closely, all the unit soldiers are actually aiming at each other. they would have actually shot each other all down. Every gun is pointed at a guy across the way also firing a gun. And it's a hilarious little gaffe in that sequence.
These are the little things in Doctor Who that we have to overlook.
I know, but some of them are funny. I mean, come on, there was one in this episode in particular I had to laugh at, which was hilarious, is that they've got Sarah Jane and Harry locked up in the bunker at the end. And it's like, oh, it's time to break out that big disintegrator gun and arm our robot with it. Well, they walk into the room where they're being held, and they move Sarah aside. She's sitting on a box, and he just opens up and pulls out the disintegrator gun. Now, I don't know if it's a good idea to lock up your prisoners with your super weapon. But it is hilarious when you
we're going strictly on like story merits. There's a few holes in Robot, you know, with the scientific society and this guy. Oh, he conveniently decided to quit, but he's conveniently still in it and
still in it. Exactly. You know. Yeah.
Hey, oh yeah, job. We repair the robot here, and somehow there's oil on the floor with this giant robot.
Speaking of Kettlewell, though, I mean, what a great performance from Eddie Burnham, who played Kettlewell.
And great hair.
Very shape. You know, he pre-cursed
Doc Brown. If you're going to be an eccentric scientist, you have to have crazy hair.
You got it. Yeah, he set the precedent before Back to the Future, I think.
Yeah. And,
he's still with us, I found out. Can you believe that? He turns 93 this Christmas Day.
I remember first watching the DVD, and there's a special, one of the extras that was in it, and was in that. And the first time I'm watching that, I was so shocked when they all of a sudden they turned to him and they do the little interview segment with him, because I just, you know, sadly just, you know, assumed that he was no longer with us. So it was great to see
him. I sadly made the same assumption.
He's great. He's still you know, around and live and kicking, as it were.
In fact, yeah, when I was doing my homework, I realized I didn't think he was still with us. One of my favorite current comedy series or recent comedy series is Black Books. And he had a part in Black Books, and I just missed it, I guess.
Did he? Really?
Yeah, in the second season of the three blind mice, the three.
He played the Russian.
And I missed that. I'm like, oh my god, that's Kettlewell. He's still
At 93, he's still working.
That's great.
On Christmas Day, that's his birthday. Maybe there's something there. I don't know. But
in our defense, though, for not recognizing that, though, Josh, he did wear massive black, you know, sunglasses. And he didn't have the hair anymore.
He didn't have but I went back. Yeah. I'm like, sure enough, that's go figure. Yeah, it's hard to recognize him in other roles without the Kettlewell hair. I mean, I know he was in the invasion playing Professor Watkins, but hard to that hair is very memorable. It holds up, still holds up to this day. Literally, I did a Lewis pun.
I'll get my usual 10%.
Yeah, you will.
Going back to what James was saying before about Sarah Jane, you know, and her screaming in this episode, it was done in 1974. So once again, we have a very strong companion, and she's her own woman. She's a very independent woman. She's a writer for a newspaper, and she's, in breaking away from Joe Grant, it's a different. It's sort of getting the best of both worlds, because there's a bit of Liz Shore being a professional in it, but still maintaining, you know, that women in distress, you know, motif that a companion often falls into. So she's getting the best of both worlds there, because she is a very, you couldn't imagine Liz Shore screaming and doing all that, you know? So I think they tried to get the best of both worlds with Sarah Jane, the character of Sarah Jane.
Sure, a little symbiosis there.
And Bessie, we see Bessie in this story. This is, I think, the last time we do see Bessie outside of the five doctors.
Bessie, the Edwardian roadster, this was its last appearance in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
It made cameos in the five doctors, Battlefield, and unfortunately Dimensions in Time thereafter. But
we overlooked that.
Yeah, we all don't. But, you know, because Pertwee was so high on the Whomobile. Toward the end of the 11th season, and had kind of phased Bessie out in a way. He purchased it. He loved that thing. And it was great that Bessie got its one last jaunt in a unit episode in the 70s before it kind of drifted away from the unit angle of things.
But it was nice to have. I mean, it would have. I think it's a plus that they did use Bessie here, because it's the Doctor's vehicle. Though the Fourth Doctor didn't seem to have. He just used it as a utility, where you would find John Pertwee's Doctor, you know, patting the dashboard and, you know, there, girl, whatever. You know, treating it more like a beloved possession, where Tom Baker just used it more utilitarian. You know, it's a vehicle.
Yeah, I think that was that. They kind of wrote that in to have, because obviously usually that would be the TARDIS, you know, his love for the TARDIS and all the rest of it. But because he was earthbound and couldn't use the TARDIS, the third Doctor, they gave him his car that he sort of, you know, that would be his
equivalent to the TARDIS, yes.
In terms that he could love this, what you think of as an inanimate object. Well, inanimate isn't the right word, because obviously it can move, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So with Tom Baker, they obviously had to sever that tie, because they wanted him to travel to other worlds and not be earthbound anymore and all the rest of it. So,
and this was the beginning of this. Again, as I said, as we started this review, that this launched a whole new era of Doctor Who, because now we're returning. When we leave this story, you know, and Harry Sullivan and Sarah Jane joins the Doctor, we go off back into the tradition of Doctor Who before the Third Doctor's era, to exploring off-worlds and leaving Earth behind, you know, for quite a bit.
For the whole season. For the whole season. Yeah. Well, at least Earth, a contemporary Earth.
Yes, yeah.
Contemporary 70s Earth. Yeah. not to confuse you more.
You know, what you need is a change. How about a little trip in a TARDIS? I'm just off.
Wait, you can't just go.
Why not? It's a free cosmos.
The Brigadier.
The Brigadier wants me to address the Cabinet, have lunch at Downing Street, dinner at the Palace, and write 17 reports in triplicate. Well, I won't do it. I won't. Why should I?
Doctor, you're being childish.
Well, of course I am. There's no point in being grown up if you can't be childish sometimes. Are you coming?
Hello. Oh, what are you two up to now, eh?
We're just going on a little trip. Would you like a jelly, baby?
Little trip? What, in that old police box?
Yes, as a matter of fact, in that old police box.
Come along now, Doctor. We're both reasonable men. And we both know that police boxes don't go careering around all over the place.
Do we?
Of course we do. The whole idea's absurd.
Is it? You wouldn't like to step inside a moment, just to demonstrate that it is all an illusion.
Well, if you think it'll do any good.
Oh, yes, it'll make me feel a lot better.
Doctor?
In you go.
Righto. Oh, I say.
Doctor, about that dinner at the palace, Her Majesty...
Yes. But I'll tell them you'll be a little late.
It was a good story. It's like I said, it's for sentimental reasons. It's also for us in the U.S. This was sort of the Tom Baker's first. It's hard for us because Tom Baker, for many of us, for longtime fans in the U.S., Tom Baker was their first doctor. So really, we all the other doctors were new doctors to us. And Tom Baker was old hat. So seeing this story, this was, for the UK, the first introduction of Tom Baker as the doctor. And it's sometimes it's hard to put us in the mind frame of what it would be like being, you know, in the UK at that time. And this being the first introduction of this iconic doctor wearing the scarf and, stuff that we just kind of take for granted as being the doctor. So it's interesting to put yourself, to try to put yourself in those shoes and see this episode as a introduction episode. And even though there is some post-regeneration silliness on Tom Baker's part, he really gets into this role almost immediately. This is the fourth Doctor as we come to see him. You know, he is the Doctor for 7 years, so his there is some change from, you know, if you compare this Doctor to what we're going to be reviewing next with the Legopolis, you know, there is some change within the character, but it's pretty much he goes right into the role of the Doctor and how he's going to play him, you know, just his style, the way he would just after succeeding it with something with the working with the computer here, stopping the countdown, he would just take his feet and put them up on the desk there and gloat a bit, and you know, it's just stuff like that really nails it down to
He nails the role he's in the role within the first 10 minutes of playing it.
Yeah.
I've noticed he's like immediately the Doctor. It's pretty incredible how quickly.
And Tom Baker had said, and he talks about it in this DVD on some of the extras there, that this wasn't him playing the Doctor. He was playing himself pretty much. Yeah. He was the character, and so it was fairly easy for him to do. And I think that's probably why, you know, he fell into this what we know to be the Doctor. You know, because we're coming with the hindsight of knowing who the fourth Doctor is. You know, watching this story.
There you are. Now come along, Doctor. You're supposed to be in the sick bay.
Am I? Don't you mean the infirmary?
No, I do not mean the infirmary. I mean the sick bay. You're not fit yet.
Not fit? I'm the Doctor.
No, Doctor. I'm the Doctor, and I say that you're not fit.
You may be a Doctor, but I'm the Doctor. The definite article, you might say.
Look here, Doctor. You're not fit.
Not fit? Not fit? Of course I'm fit. All systems go.
Sick.
Look. Heartbeat?
I say, I don't think that could be right.
Both a bit fast, are they?
Well, I don't.
Still, must be patient. A new body's like a new house. Takes a little bit of time to settle in. As for the physiognomy, well, nothing's perfect. Have to take the rough with the smooth. Mind you, I think the nose is a definite improvement. As for the ears, well, I'm not too sure. Tell me, quite frankly, what do you say to the ears?
Well, I really don't know.
Well, of course you don't. Why should you? You're a busy man. You don't want to stand here burbling about my ears, neither here nor there. I can't waste any more time. Things to do, places to go. I'm a busy man too, you know. Thank you for the most interesting conversation. Must be on my way.
There's absolutely no question of leaving, Doctor. Now, you go back to the infirmary. I mean, the sick bay. Get into bed and stay there until I say that you can get up.
How can I prove my point?
I feel I ought to warn you, Doctor, that there's grave danger of myocardial infarction, not to speak of pulmonary embolus. Yes, I should. I should.
Mother. Mother. I feel sick. Send for the doctor. Quick, quick, quick. Mother, dear, shall I die? Yes, my darling, by and by. One, two, three.
Well, I love how you mentioned it earlier when you're just like, oh, it was my first doctor. That's how we have. I love how people kind of equate their first doctor to like losing their virginity. Like, I'm married to Stephen, but my first was Melissa. You know, it's like, hey, my favorite is David Tennant, but my doctor was Don Baker. So the same, it's weird. It's a correlation there.
So I felt that this is important for that reason. And the story itself has some slow pacing. There's some flaws within, as we kind of spoke about already, but I'm going to give this 4 TARDIS groans. I think it could have been better. It kind of straddles 3.5 and 4, but I'm going to push it to 4. I think it was, it's an interesting story. I like the references to, you know, Isaac Asimov's laws of robotics, you know, harking back to iRobot. And, you know, I think that plays well here. I think the design of the robot, and I think it's all classic stuff here, and it's interesting just to see Tom Baker's first foray as the Doctor in this story.
And the first time we had the TARDIS ever integrated into the opening credits as well.
Yeah, that's another key thing. The opening credits, the iconic opening credits, includes the TARDIS, which continues today.
Yeah.
So, gentlemen, what did you guys think of it? How would you rate this story?
Oh, I'll go ahead and give it, out of 5, I'll give it 4. I'm only taking a TARDIS groan off, you know, as much as I do allow effects to kind of, you know, I keep my check my brain at the door, obviously, for some of the classic series. The use of, we call them, when we were growing up, we had G.I. Joe tanks and G.I. Joe figures. There was a conscious decision during the production to use
the tank
models.
I guess
they're called Action Man. We called them G.I. Joes, but in England, mm-hmm. I guess they had what's called Action Man, which were tanks and little soldier figures. So when it came down to using miniatures for like some of the soldiers that were picked up and shooked around in the tank, they literally, Barry Letts had said, we just brought in some Action Man toys and we thought that would work. And he's the first to admit it quite didn't. And so the effects when they really dip, it really takes me out of it, kind of, unfortunately.
Yeah, that was forced perspective scene with the tank model as well, which didn't really...
Yeah, the tank models, and then, like, when the Sarah Jane model...
The
and,
Sarah Jane doll tangling in the hand of the robot.
And, like, the Action Man soldiers he would shake around. Really, a lot like Terror of the Zygons when the creature comes out of the Thames. You know, it's like the effects kind of dip so far out of it, even my, you know, my leniency, that it takes me out of the episode. So I take a little off from each, like Zygons and robots. So I'm going to have to go 4 instead of 5, just based on that little nitpicking, that little nitpick. But it's a solid all around, solid episode.
Very good. So you give it 4 TARDIS groans as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, all right. So James or Ken? Each one is waiting for the other.
I'll go first then. I kind of agree with everything that's been said, but I'm gonna kind of be the Simon Cowell and give it 3 out of 5. Just because, I think it is one of those episodes that really sticks in my brain, and one of the ones which when I think of my first memories of Doctor Who, I used to watch reruns, repeats of the Pertwee era. And so this really was my sort of the first regeneration that I was introduced to. Aside from watching, you know, a lot of the Sylvester McCoy stuff, this was the first regeneration that I saw. And I don't know, it kind of, it felt more like a 1950s sci-fi movie than Doctor Who. And with Doctor Who, there was always something a little bit different. And here I think they were trying to play tribute to too many different things for me, too many different monsters, too many different eras in a way. And whilst I love the, and just for the sheer story alone, I'll give it four out of five TARDIS groans. But I think that they tried to push the boat out maybe a little bit too much. So for me, that's why I'm having to play the Simon Cowell card and reduce it to three TARDIS groans out of five. Gotcha. Ken.
I'm going to go with 3.5. I'm going to split the difference between what you gentlemen have been talking about. I agree with you that that there are some flaws, and if you were rating this purely as just on the story aspect, that's where I have to do some subtraction of TARDIS groans. But the flip side is, for many people, this is really the pilot episode to Doctor Who. You talked about how many people started with Tom Baker. And even if you join Tom Baker's era somewhere in the middle or even towards the end, at some point you discovered Robot and you wanted to see how his doctor started.
Well, especially this
is,
PBS.
Is a mini pilot episode.
Yeah,
it is the first of the Doctor Who that 90% of the world knows. And
I was just going to mention that during the time in the late 70s and early 80s, this is the set of episodes that PBS was showing was basically just Tom Baker. So this, they would go back to Robot after, you know, they run the full, you know, length, full run of episodes. You would always return back to Robot was the beginning. So like you said, this was sort of the pilot episode for us in the U.S.
Usually, you know, what gives this a bit of warm and fuzzy feeling is what usually when you had that cycle, when you got to Robot, whether you were returning after Peter Davison or after Legopolis or after Invasion of Time or wherever the cycle began, when you put on your television and you saw an episode of Robot, whether it's part one or some part in there, you knew you had the whole run of Tom Baker in front of you.
Yeah.
And there's something to that. You know, there's something
like, here we go again. It's like you're back on the ride again.
Yeah, and it's like, wow, we get to go again, and there's this great anticipation. I agree with Lewis that Tom Baker seems to nail the Doctor right off the bat. He does a little funny bits there, you know, in the beginning, and there's a little bit of a goof going on, but for the most part, he's the Doctor, right from the start. Tom Baker hits a home run right from the beginning. If you put Robot minus the regeneration scene almost anywhere in some of those early episodes, you wouldn't be able to tell
exactly
that, oh, this is Tom Baker just taking the role.
Yeah, I agree with that. Wow, that's true.
And there's a little bit of of the leftovers from the Pertwee era. We have UNIT. We have familiar characters like the Brigadier and Benton there.
Yeah, Earthbound story.
Yeah, so there's some familiarity. You see Bessie, you know, this is still Doctor Who. You know, there's a comfort going on there. And then we get a chance in Ark in Space to take the next step for Tom Baker's era, really to kick in and make his own mark. And from a production side, there's plenty of familiar faces with Christopher Barry and Robert Holmes and Terrence Dix and Barry Letts. There's a lot of people there that you're in familiar territory, that the whole thing is handed off in a proper way. So
Well, we should make a mention that this was made in 1974. It was transmitted into the very end of December of 1974 and through January 1975. And it's available on DVD, and It's we didn't really go into detail about the DVT. I thought it was a good transfer. It's fairly clear. Not a lot of extras, but there's some extras there as far as content goes. And it was a 2007 release, DVD release by 2 Entertain.
And it's also an excellent audiobook. BBC audiobook put the novelized version out as an audiobook with Tom Baker doing the read. And anytime you have Tom Baker doing the read, you know you're gonna have a good time. He does a different voices for different characters, and his voice is very rich, and he really reads it in a very passionate way. And this is one of my favorite audiobooks. I've listened to this one a few times, and mm-hmm. just because Tom Baker's worth the price of admission.
All right. Any other final comments? There was a long recap, you know, on episode 3. They come back with Tom Baker's the fourth Doctor just entering the room before the robot starts attacking him, and it's like a 3-minute recap, which is
they were short on. I think the episode was short. They actually had that problem when they were shooting. The first one was running a bit short, so the scene where they find out where the robot had started his tunnel, or where his tunnel came out in the woods. Mm-hmm. That scene was borrowed from episode 2, which was actually running too long, and they placed it in 1, because they were running short, and that kind of business happened a lot. So I can almost guarantee you the reason why that recap went on as long as it did was to fill in the time, because they're running short.
And another little commentary is that this is the last of the unit stories. Really, I mean, we do see you again in the future, but this is the whole run of John Pertwee's era was basically unit stories, and this was the swan song finale really of unit really until was it Android Invasion or whatever.
They were involved with the Zygon.
The Zygons, yeah. Oh, and also John Levine, friend of Doctor Who Podshock, was got a lot of lines in this story.
He was promoted.
To warrant officer, and got a bit more to do as far as dialogue goes.
Well, he's the one I think who suggests the metal virus. So, in a sense, he was the hero. He suggests that he'd overheard Kettlewell talking about the metal virus. So the Doctor and Harry say that's brilliant. They go off and they make the virus, and he technically was the impetus of saving the day.
Well, still nothing, sir. We're spreading the search radius wider and wider, but the bigger the area to cover, the harder it gets.
It is just one teeny-weeny little thing.
Well, what's that?
Something else you haven't thought of. What are we going to do with it when we find it?
Yes. You know, just once I'd like to meet an alien menace that wasn't immune to bullets.
Excuse me, sir?
Hmm?
Well, when Professor Kettlewell was here talking to Miss Smith, he said the robot was made of some kind of living metal. He even said it could grow.
Did he now?
Yes, and he went on about some kind of metal virus, something that attacked the living metal.
In the same way disease attacks animal tissue.
Well, something like that. Anyway, I just wondered if we could...
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's probably a daft idea anyway.
Wonderful, Mr. Benton. Wonderful. Brigadier, I must get to Kettlewell's place at once. You find the robot.
Well, it was finally good to see John Levine as Benton doing a bit more and having a bit more lines. And unfortunately, we don't see him again until some episodes later, but... It was good to see that he got a little bit of his due.
Yeah, he didn't come back till I think it was the Android Invasion. But you can always ask him about that. Hey, also, Robot at that time also held the record when it came out for being the shortest Doctor Who title ever, with only 4 letters. Oh. Kenda and Shada had come out after that. Shada would come out afterwards. And, mm-hmm.
And Shada was never actually released.
And it was not released. It wasn't until Rose, which is a 4-letter title that...
That begins
Robot
with R as well.
Yeah. I don't know if you count 42 of those letters. I'm not sure.
Oh,
but anyway,
42.
But that was another a note that I came across when I was preparing for this. Interesting. All right.
All right. Well, any other robotic comics? Comments?
I'm not doing a robot voice for you, Lewis.
All right. Then we'll be right back on Doctor Who Podchuck.
Hey, next week is the Blog World and New Media Expo 2009, the world's largest new media conference and expo, October 15th through the 17th, Las Vegas, Nevada.
It's a place where you can meet and learn from top bloggers, podcasters, social media experts, web TV, and radio pros, and more. I'll be there. If you're heading out there, please go to our website, thegallifreyinembassy.org or podshock.net, or even arttrap.com, and click on the link that we have there to register online. And I got a special promo code for you, so you can save some money. If you use code PB20, that's PB as in police box, PB20, you'll save 20% off any registration package. It's 1 week to go. Once again, it's if you are a blogger, a podcaster, or if you're just interested in social media and you'd like to find out more about it, Blog World and New Media Expo. Doctor Who Podshock will be represented there in the form of me. So if you are going, please let me know that you're going, and please do say hello. All right, we're back with Doctor Who Podshock, and with us is Joshua Lou Friedman, our West Coast correspondent. We're very pleased to have him back on the show. And
yes.
Along with me is James and Ken, my two fellow cohorts in crime. I'm always glad to have them with me by my side. So we just reviewed Robot here, and next up is Legopolis. Did we review this before?
I don't think so. Okay. I don't recall reviewing it.
All right, just checking.
That's the problem when you have 100,000 episodes.
Trying not to repeat yourself, yeah.
Well, you haven't reviewed it for this Regeneration series, so this will be you'll be getting the Regeneration edition of the review next week.
And we're jumping 7 years ahead. You know, this is the longest jump, you know, going from, you know, these Regeneration stories. So it's going to be interesting seeing how Tom Baker changed as the Doctor in, you know, comparing his role in Robot to Legopolis.
Sure. And there's definitely even through if he ended, say, somewhere around where Shada would have been, you could say, well, the character was pretty consistent over almost the entire time with some different fluctuations. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely he knew he was leaving, and there's this more serious, somber Doctor leading into the Regeneration, almost like he knew that he was coming to an end and all these kind of things. And some people might take that as, well, he didn't really, you know, he was looking to bow out. He couldn't wait to get off the show. And then in other ways, you could consider it genius that he knew that he was going to play it, that this was a man coming to the end of his time, let's say. And I think we're going to see that with David Tennant heading into his last few episodes, that there's going to start to be this weight on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Sure. That's good dramatic weight. Hey, guys, thanks for having me back on the show, by the way. It's been a while.
Josh, it's been a pleasure having you. And also, we want to also do a slight plug for you. You were on another podcast, The Mafia, The Popcorn Mafia.
Yeah, I did the movie review podcast that it was on shortly after. I want to say when I returned this past summer from visiting the two of you.
Yes.
So, I will give you guys a shout out when I'm back on their show. I couldn't last time, but I will. And I'm definitely I'm actually getting together with those girls tonight. I think I meant to open this episode with saying Konnichiwa, which is with the girl. I think I just kind of like completely channel that. I must have been listening to it too much. But yeah, I hang out with them a lot, and it's been great, and I'll be back on their show as well.
Well, please send them our regards.
I will. And it's been great to do this, actually, since I've visited you, because now I can do the podcast with the visual. Since I've been in both rooms where you guys are
that's
recording
right.
from, I have. And you've been where I'm in the movie room, obviously. So, yeah, we all know where we're speaking from, except you, James. You're going to have to...
Yeah, I'm still in the dark.
Yeah, Amy will have to give you the rundown.
Oh, we're going to have to visit York.
Yes, and I'll have to visit New York and indeed LA. So,
Well, I know, like, I can see the visual with their podcast. I have no idea what your podcast is.
Well,
could be some
Josh, I have to tell you that I'm going to throw you a curveball. I'm not recording upstairs anymore. I'm downstairs. The summer was just way too hot to record upstairs, and I moved all my gear downstairs. So,
it's
entirely different now. I'm sorry.
Now you're going to have to come back again.
Not going to come back again.
What a shame.
It's okay here. Ha ha. Well, I will be back actually next summer, so I'm looking forward to seeing everyone in person then.
But before then, we'll see you at Gallifrey in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and yeah, James, you are out for Gallifrey. There's no...
I will be there.
Very looking forward to it, sir.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Last year was, and this year's going to be even better, I'm sure.
Yeah, we're gonna make that happen for sure. Awesome, guys. Well, yeah, it was great to be back on the show, and thanks for having me on there. Again, Tom Baker was my doctor, my first. That's the one that got me. And so it was great to be a part of this, the review of his.
Thank you for being on board. Your knowledge is incredible, and it's always a pleasure to have you on board.
Oh, thank you, guys. It's great to be back. Thanks.
All right. Well, James, who was your first doctor?
Who was my first doctor? Technically, I guess it was Sylvester McCoy, but I watched an awful lot more John Pertwee at the time, just mm-hmm. from what I had from either my mate's videotapes or reruns on TV and stuff like that. So I'd like to say John Pertwee, but of my age, it was actually Sylvester McCoy.
Yeah. Well, that would make sense, yeah. Okay, I was just curious.
Yeah, we are a victim of our age of when we discover the show, of course. Yeah. Hey, you know, we did a whole robot review. The one thing we forgot to mention, I got to give a shout-out to Patricia Maynard, who played Hilda Winters, mm-hmm. the yes. think tank. What a performance. Scared the living crap out of me. There's something about her, Madame Defarge quality, if you will, that she kind of – she was awesome. And I can't believe I didn't mention it when we were reviewing it. But she's one hell of a villainess. Go figure.
Yes, very true. Very, very true.
So I had to give her the shout-out. Awesome.
And don't forget, you can follow us all on Twitter. You can follow James at twitter.com/JamesNorton. Ken at twitter.com/KenDeep. Joshua Liu is at twitter.com JL Friedman. That's JLFRIEDMAN. And of course, Doctor Who Podchalk, you can follow on Twitter as well at twitter.com/Podchalk. And I'm at twitter.com/LewisTrapani. That's LOUIS.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps things up for another episode of Doctor Who Podshock.
Yay.
So thanks awesome. For listening, and we'll see you again next week.
Cheers.
Cheers, everyone. Cheers. You have been listening to Doctor Who Podshock, presented by the fan-run GallifreyNBC.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podshock. You can email us at feedback@podshock.net. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This Art Trap production is presented by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible in part by donations from listeners like you. Thank you for your support.
You know, just once I'd like to meet an alien menace that wasn't immune to bullets.